How to take title on your investment properties. That's today's show. Let's dive into it. Hey, everyone. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Yes, she is. And this is the Investing in Real Estate show. And today we're going to talk about how to take title on your investment properties. If you're new to the show, we talk about passive income, cash flow, and the vehicle that we use to help you achieve financial freedom is buy and hold real estate. Now, you can make it more complicated than it has to be, but there are some basics that you need to have in place if you're going to buy properties. You don't just go out willy-nilly and put them in your own name and buy them in your own name and think, that's it, I'm done. I don't even have to set up a separate bank account. I don't have to do anything. There are a lot of other layers of complexity that can be added into this that can truly make you financially free, can help you on your taxes, can help protect you legally. So today we're going to talk about title. Why are we talking about title today?
Well, because title is your claim to your property. So a title is sort of the record of who has owned this property in history. And so when you go to buy a property and they say, okay, I'm going to do a title search, that's what they're doing. They go to the county and see what's been recorded on this parcel of land so that they can sort of figure out if there's any gaps. And so if there's a gap in title, someone may lay claim to it at another time. These things are important, right? Because you don't want someone coming out of the woodwork saying like, oh, my Uncle Phil left me this title and I didn't know it. And it was sold at tax auction, but really it's mine. That would be a disaster, right? But there are other reasons why you want to know how you're taking title to an investment property. And a lot of that has to do with liability as well. So we're going to talk about that. This is something I actually learned in real estate school, and I didn't know these things. In fact, we learned that we did it wrong when we bought our first property together.
We did.
And then when we bought our first property together that we intended to live in, our house in the mountains,
we're going to go over
how we did it wrong.
Okay, I was going to say, how do we screw that up?
After I went to real estate school, I realized that if something had happened to you, I would have owned it with your mother, which was not my favorite idea in the world. So I was like, oh, I wish I had known this. So we're going to talk about that specifically. Now, obviously,
I can't wait to hear that story.
To your estate attorney. I did tell you the story. You don't remember?
I don't remember. Well, yeah, I do. Well, I just don't. I can't wait to hear the intricacies of it. You probably told me while we were driving and we had a kid yipping at my heels or something like
that.
So.
Well, I mean, I learned this in real estate school, and then I went back and I looked at our deed and I was like, holy cow, if something had happened to him, I would have owned it with my in-laws. And so I just would not have made that mistake if I had known. I would have made a different plan.
So you want to talk
to your attorney about, planning your estate. We talk all the time about how you should not own things as a sole proprietor. These things should be owned inside of an LLC. That's beyond the scope of this episode because you already should know that, right?
Right. So do you want to start by talking about how we should take title, or do you want to talk how you shouldn't do it? Do you want to talk about the mistakes that people make? You want to start there?
Right. Okay. So if you are buying this by yourself in an LLC that you own by your own self, like my nephew likes to say, then the highest form of ownership of a property is fee simple. It's just the way that the government calls it. Fee simple means it's all yours. No one else has any claims to it, right? But what if you're buying it with a buddy or an investor friend? Or what if you're going in with other people, right? So one way to do that is tenancy in common. Now, when you're a tenant in common, it means that you kind of split ownership right down the middle. So you each own a certain portion of it. You can sort of own different proportions of it, like I own 30%, you own 70%, but you definitely own it as a partnership together.
And this has nothing to do with tenants. This has nothing to do with tenants, like living in a rental property. Mm-mm. Okay.
Not at all. So that means that your portion of it will go down your right of survivorship. So this is what I was saying about how we bought our first property together as tenancy in common. Now, we weren't married at the time, and so our marriage would not have protected me from your half of it. So I own 50%, you own 50%. And if something happened to me, my interest in the property would have gone right down my descendants' line. And so since we had a child at the time, So I guess it could have gone to him, but before the child was born, it would have gone to my parents or my sister or whoever I had designated. And if something happened to you, your ownership would have gone right down the line. So that means that when you have a tenant in common, they can do whatever they want with their half of the property, right? They can force you to sell it in some states, in some instances. They can be sued and then be sued for their portion of it. So say you have a tenant.
Wow, how does that affect you?
Right, it sucks, right? So say you have a tenancy in common with your investor friend, Bradley. Okay,
Bradley. Bradley sounds like a shady character.
And Bradley has a house where he runs illegal meth clinic.
All right. Right, okay.
And so Bradley was a tenancy in common with you, Clayton, and Bradley then is sued by someone for something that happened in his meth lab. Now, Bradley can be sued for everything he owns, and because Bradley didn't own his interest in an LLC in the property, Bradley can be sued for his interest in the property he owns with you, Clayton. In which case, now, the person who sued Bradley, let's call her Vera, Vera now is your new partner because she sued for his interest and won it, right?
Okay.
So these things can be scary. So that's one of the reasons that maybe you want to own it as a tenancy in common inside your own LLCs, right?
Okay. So if you have a tenancy in common in your own LLC, how does that protect you from Bradley?
Well, it may not protect you inside the property, but at least it protects you inside of whatever else Bradley is doing, right? Because if you and Bradley have your own LLCs that own the property tenancy in common, well, then Bradley can only lose his portion of his tenancy in common. You still own yours, but the new partner that you're owning with may decide they want to force you to sell the property. You may have to do that. It really depends on either the state that you're in or the ownership that you've set up. So these are things that can be kind of scary.
So is tenancy in common smart? I mean, is that something you'd want to do, or is that like the least smart way of doing this?
No, I think it is one of the most smart way of doing it if you're doing it with someone that you're not married to and someone who is not inside of your family, and also make sure that you own the tenancy in common inside of an LLC, right? And then, because what happens if you want to 1031 exchange, right?
Right.
Then you have to 1031 exchange out of your LLC into a new LLC. That doesn't mean that you have to 1031 with Bradley, right? I don't think. I'm pretty sure you don't.
You want to explain, so a 1031 exchange, and I'll be clear about what a 1031 exchange is.
You explain the 1031 exchange is, and I'll look that up because I put it in my notes.
All right, get to your notes. So a 1031 exchange is probably one of the most important wealth vehicles there is. And we have, you know, Tom Wheelwright and others on the show talking about 1031 exchanges, because you can take, if you've got a, let's say you've got a property that's worth $300,000 and you want to sell it in order to buy five properties that are worth 50,000, or, you know, six properties that are worth 50,000 each, which you could do, right? You could sell that $300,000 in a 1031 exchange. You have, I believe you have 45 days then to identify the properties. And then I think you have like 180 to close on it. Don't quote me on the exact numbers, right? But you have a certain amount of time. You have 45 days to identify your next properties. You don't pay taxes on it. You literally can do the sale. The proceeds from that $300,000 house, you can roll them right into a like and kind investment and purchase. So we have a lot of investors that do that, right? They might buy, they have a property in Arizona that they had for $300,000. It's a terrible return on investment, terrible cash flow. And then they take that and they sell, and they roll it into about six properties that are worth 50,000, but they're cash flowing way, way higher. So that is a 1031 exchange. Exactly.
Yeah.
So did you find your notes?
In my notes then, yes. If you both have your own LLCs, you can take that portion of your property and 1031 it, exchange it, 1031 it, exchange it.
And,
Roger that, 1099.
Right.
You can 1031 exchange it into your own thing, whatever your LLC wants to do after that. But if you did it in one LLC and you and Bradley were co-partners in the LLC, then you and Bradley are stuck together until you dissolve that LLC and pay taxes on the sale of that property, right? So a good lawyer might say, okay, here's a fourplex. I have two investors that are going to buy it together. I've got Bradley LLC and Vera LLC. They own it as tenancy in common. They both have the same right to title. They also have the same right to access to the property. It's called, what is that called? Possession. You both have the same right of possession, right? And then you guys decide to sell the fourplex. Well, then Bradley LLC can 1031 exchange into single family homes, and Vera LLC can 1031 exchange into a multiplex, whatever.
Right.
Whatever they want, right? Because your lawyer is smart enough to set that up for you.
Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. You know, I actually had to hire someone recently and went through the powerful platform of LinkedIn Jobs to help me match the role that I'm looking for with qualified candidates so you can find the right person quickly. It was amazing. Think about LinkedIn, first of all, right? This incredible behemoth of people that have, amazing skills that are logged into this platform from all over the world. They have an active community of professionals with more than 690 million members worldwide. So, if you think you're most valuable people you're looking for to hire right now, what features do you think that they need? LinkedIn has them. So do I want someone who is, an early riser or a great writer or excellent on computers, graphic design? LinkedIn Jobs will screen candidates with hard and soft skills that you're looking for. And it puts your job in front of qualified members every day so that it's seen by people looking for jobs like yours. That's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. So when your business is ready to make the next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. Let's do it. You can pay what you want and you get the first $50 off. You can pay what you want and you get $50 off just by using this coupon code. Go to linkedin.com/investing. Again, go to linkedin.com/investing to get $50 off your first job posting. Again, linkedin.com/investing. You're going to get your first job posting for $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks, LinkedIn Jobs. Okay, so that's one way of doing it, tenancy in common. What's another way? And are they kind of on par with each other if we look at this other strategy?
Yeah, so the other strategy is joint tenancy, and that means that you don't divide your right to survivorship. So if you and I own our property, in fact, the home we're sitting in now, we own as joint tenants. That means if something happens to me, you assume ownership of the entire estate. I don't have a divisible ownership that then goes down my own descendancy. Does that make sense?
So I'm sorry. Explain that to me again, like I'm a 4-year-old. So
okay.
Yeah. So explain this to me again.
Let's use that Bradley and Vera again.
Okay.
So now Bradley and Vera decide to buy a house as joint tenants. Okay.
Right.
And then Vera accidentally drinks poison and dies. And so Vera's ownership in the estate does not go down to whoever she is designated because they're joint tenants. Now Bradley owns everything. Okay.
So it just reverts to him.
It means, yes. So because you and I are a married couple, this house we're sitting on now is own joint tenants. That means if something happens to you, I own the whole house. I don't have to then pass your half of it down, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
So this is typically not something you do with an investor partner. You can do it with a spouse. You own it joint tenants because that means that your partnership will then just be assumed by the other partner. It's just not very common or smart to do it with someone that you're not married to.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. So, and I guess under certain laws, so under marriage laws, it would just be automatic. But if you're forming an LLC with a partner, it's not automatic. You have to designate with your, attorney how you're setting this up and filing it.
Right. So a tenant in common may bequeath their interest through a will or a trust, right? That means you send it down to someone else. But a joint tenant cannot. Upon the death of the joint tenant, the surviving tenant automatically owns the entire property. By law.
I don't like that they call them tenants. It's so confusing. right? Like, why do you need to call them tenants?
Confusing. Right. You're not really a tenant. You're an owner. They should call it owner in common or whatever. But yes, so don't let that word confuse you, because you're going to see this on your title. And if you're buying with someone else, you want to check it over, because we didn't. And thankfully, Clayton survived all the way through the beginning of our ownership of that property through when we got married. And then when you get married, the marital estate has different protections. So then Clayton's parents couldn't then come and say, well, you know, you were tenants in common and we want our half of the property because we're Clayton's next of kin. I could say no, because it's the marital estate. But those rules only, they're different in every state, and they really only apply to, I think, as a primary residence, and the vacation home also it applies to, but it wouldn't apply to investment homes at all.
Right.
So that's why this is worth talking about.
All right, great. So we've got those two different ways. Is there another way?
There is tenancy by the entirety. That's also something that exists mostly between married people. So I think, you know, you should ask your lawyer about it. It's really not worth going into.
Okay.
There are other ways, but these are the main ways for investors. So I think the main thing to know is that if you're investing with somebody else, you should have your own LLC, right? So that, because again, if you go in on an LLC together, you're stuck with that person. It doesn't hurt you to have your own LLC partner with someone else's LLC, that, so that you're free to then move on to the next thing by yourself if you want to.
Right.
Right. And also smart to do it as tenants in common. And then just be really careful about who you partner up with, because if you partner up with Meth Head Bradley and he gets sued, then you got a new partner that you didn't want and you didn't choose, right? And so there are two different kinds of attacks that can come up, you know, upon a partner, upon an investor. There can be an attack that happens. This is like ways that you're liable for lawsuit. Like something happens on the property, then your insurance would most likely cover. That's
right.
Called attack number one. It's related to the investment property. But attack number two could be that, like, I'm driving along and I hit somebody on a bicycle as I'm leaving a parking lot, and that person sues me, has nothing to do at all with my investment, but they can sue me for everything that I own outside of my LLCs, right? That's an attack number two. It has nothing to do with the main investment property. And so you want to make sure that you're not liable for your partner's attack number two. Right? You want to watch out for number two.
Watch out for number two. Yeah. Instead of just looking out for number one.
Right.
Instead of just looking out for number one, be careful, look out for number two.
Because if you're partnered up with someone who's not protected,
right,
then you're liable for all of their attack number twos. Right? Like, say you fall in love with someone, you meet at a bar, and you buy an investment property together, and you don't do it inside of LLCs, and then that person is an esthetician and she burns someone's face, right? And then she gets sued. And then she's sued all the way up to your property.
Right.
I'm coming up with all these really wild.
I know. Like, what kind of novels are you reading? This is the stuff that, you know, Natalie watches. She watches like Big Little Lies on HBO or something. All these people are getting burned in meth labs.
So-and-so's
God knows,
drinking poison, and I'm
hitting
people in parking lots. But you have to think about these things.
By the way, and I just want to say this.
Of assets.
So we have this on tape in case I ever mysteriously die, right? If there's ever a case where, like,
poisoning.
I'm poisoned. Yeah. Or if something mysterious happens, I want you to know, police, where to look first, right? Because we know who's planning this stuff.
Right. Because we have joint tenancy. And so
right.
If something happens to you, it's all mine. Look around.
See? Exactly. Exactly. All right. So that wraps it up. Right? How to take title on your properties. It's a little complicated.
Yeah.
That's why you definitely want to work with a lawyer.
That's sort of 101, right? There are other more complicated ways to do it, but these are just things to keep in mind. And like I said, I learned this in real estate school, and I was like, how come I didn't know this? Felt like a real dummy for not knowing that before I had signed title to our house. So now you won't be a dummy because you know these things.
That's right. And that's what we're all, the whole point of this entire channel is to make you not a dummy and to educate you, create financial intelligence. Because where are you going to find this stuff out? You're not going to see this one tuning into CNBC. are going to be talking about the markets and whether or not Facebook shares are up or down. You're not going to learn that there. You're going to learn it right here. So thank you so much for subscribing, becoming a member of this community. It's totally free, and we try to do it and bring value to you. So thank you so much kindly. If you're listening to the audio version of this, please head over to the iTunes store and leave us a nice review if you'd be so kind. We only take 5-star reviews, I believe, right? I hope we only take 5-star reviews. So thank you so much. We try to publish this show multiple times per week to bring value to you. Any final words, young lady?
I don't think so. Beware of meth labs and estheticians.
Yeah. We'll see you back here next time on another episode of the Investing in Real Estate Show. Now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. It's the number one way to build wealth in this country. We'll see you, everybody.